You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
The name of the program is Full Contact Fighter Radio, and I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia, as always. And my co-host, Brendan Lear, is trekking across the great, vast prairies of Canada once again. Brendan, how are you doing today?
I am well, Kelsey.
That's good,
enjoying
buddy.
Enjoying my time in Calgary, Alberta.
Yes, and you arrived okay. The driving conditions were all right?
Yes, I took the bus.
Just to play it safe, huh?
That's from Edmonton to Calgary because it's actually almost as fast and not as humiliating as flying these days.
Right.
Subject to degrading procedures and containment in small areas and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, for the listeners now, they've heard you, they've heard you be on the show from Regina, from Calgary. Wow, you are truly an international man.
Toronto, this is just a quickie trip.
Oh, yeah, Toronto as well.
This is just a quickie trip.
Right.
This is not just business, no pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for taking some time out from your five-star hotel room to join our little show. We appreciate it. And maybe you can tip the valet guy $5 for me, and I'll pay you back whenever I see you again.
I tip my pizza guy $5. It's disgusting.
It's unfortunate. Should have treated yourself to some room service.
That was from room service.
Oh.
You know, I like to, really have a bad diet when my wife is not around. Take advantage of these few and far between opportunities, and it's a real letdown.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear that, man. You're in Calgary, so maybe you'll have time to rustle up some big fat steaks. It's kind of beef country in Canada.
Well, you know what I noticed that was weird about downtown Calgary is it all smells like meat.
Really?
Like cooked meat.
I've never noticed that when I've been there.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're like firing up a big cow somewhere.
Well, it's too bad there's no fights down there this weekend that you could have gone to. I know you're not really staying too long, but I'm trying to segue this into mixed martial arts somehow. Calgary actually holds quite a few events these days. They've got King of the Cage Canada has been there a few times, and they've got some other smaller shows that sort of feature up-and-coming fighters, and I think Rumble in the Cage has had plans from Lethbridge. They do their shows, and they've had plans of going out to Calgary, so Calgary's definitely joined the mixed martial arts map of Canada over the last couple of years. So,
well, it's tough because, I was going to do a satellite uplink from the Gracie Bar School here, and the Full Contact Fighter satellite truck got stuck somewhere coming over the Rockies, so.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Could have talked, Josh Russell trains down there. He's Jason McDonald's jiu-jitsu instructor. That would have been a good feed, buddy. Nice.
Next time.
Yeah.
Next time. I don't know where that truck is. It just never got here.
Well, on the program today, we've got Joe Riggs, who is never a loss for words. He'll be joining the program as well. He's been on the show a couple times before and has always been an entertaining guest. And he, of course, taking on Diego Sanchez next Wednesday, December 13th, in the main event of the Ultimate Fight Night. And that card is looking really solid from top to bottom, really. So I'm looking forward to that card, and we're looking forward to talking to Joe and hearing his thoughts about his fight with Diego coming up.
I know that the card is probably one of the best looking cards this year, and again, it's one of the best looking cards this year, and it's for free, so it's a win-win all around.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned. We'll be back to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Mr. Joe Diesel Riggs.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Marie Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Hey, this is Kurt Batman Pellegrino, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Diesel Joe Riggs. Joe, how are you doing tonight?
Not bad. How you guys doing?
Now, of course, Joe Riggs is going to be taking on Diego Sanchez December 13th at the Ultimate Fight Night coming up next week. And, Joe, my first question for you, you're one of those guys that you're a fighter who's trained with many different camps, a lot of different fighters all over the country. Team Miletic, Jeremy Horn, Johnny Alessio, those guys as well. Who have you been spending the most of your time getting ready for this fight with?
You guys hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yep. I stayed in Phoenix. You know, me and my buddy, my best friend, Edwin Deweese, we opened up our own gym here down in Phoenix. And Edwin, we've had a bunch of guys coming through here, like Chris Lytle, you know, Shoni Carter, Dean Thomas, Carol Parisian, Dean Lester, just a whole bunch of guys just coming through the gym. So, this has been a really good training camp for me for this fight. You know, then as always, Adam DeWeese is always here with me.
And it's interesting to hear that Carl was out there helping you guys out. Obviously, Carl was the most recent opponent of Diego Sanchez. Did he give you some good heads up as to what to expect?
Yeah, you know, he just said. Pretty much, everybody knows what Diego's going to do. I mean, he's a great fighter. There's no really tricks. Just got to come in shape to fight him. You know, he's a great fighter that likes to take the fight to the ground. But just getting to work out with him and feel where I was at with his skill level, you know, just was a good thing for my mental state. You know, that was the most important thing I got out of it. You know, he's a great fighter. He's someone good to train with.
And you mentioned training with Carol Parisian and his recent fight against Diego Joe. And I think a lot of people would also say that Johnny Alessio's performance against Diego somewhat revealed some, chinks in the armor of Diego. Have you talked to Johnny about that? And I'm guessing that you would probably like to enact a similar game plan to John's, or maybe be a little bit more aggressive, but keep the fight standing and throw hands?
Pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much Paul Jones' blueprint, you know, to keep the fight on my feet. And, they both gave me a little inside tips what to expect, really. But, I hope to God that he just stands up with me for a little while, because, that'd be a blessing for me. But he's a really smart fighter, and, you know, I don't think he's going to do that. But just pretty much follow the game plan of John Alessio and just be a little more aggressive, and I think that's going to lead me to victory.
Joe, how do you find your weight coming off right now? We're about, a week out? What are you weighing right now?
That's crazy. My weight's come off great. I'm just getting adapted. My body just adjusting to being at 170. After practice today, I was 178. So it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Wow, that's excellent.
How do you approach a fight like this from a mental standpoint? Everyone was predicting you to pretty much walk through Jason Von Flue, and that's pretty much what happened. And then you're going up against a guy like Diego, where I think most people are picking Diego. Does that affect you at all, Joe? Do you kind of enjoy being the underdog?
No, it doesn't. When I first got in the UFC, I used to, see who was the favorite and who was the underdog. You know, I mean, that's not the way it doesn't bother me. You know, I know in my heart what I'm capable of. So, you know, I just go in there and you got, you know, if I fight my best, I know there's nobody in the world that can beat me at 170. So, you know, the underdogs and stuff like that doesn't matter. If I was a favorite or underdog, it doesn't really matter to me.
And so I take it then it wouldn't matter to you either, that you feel that some people are looking past you a little bit in this fight?
That's fine. I mean, he's a fighter that's proven himself. You know, I mean, I knew he'd be a favorite. You know, I mean, it doesn't bother me if people think it's going to... I don't think anybody thinks it's going to be easy to fight for him, but, you know, I mean, I can understand how people think he would be the favorite, but, yeah, none of that stuff bothers me. Not at all.
What was your impression of Diego's last fight with Carl? Actually, it was I thought it was one of the I thought it was actually one of the more exciting fights of the year. Did that leave any lasting impressions with you watching that fight?
Yeah, he's a great fighter, man. Just his conditioning is unbelievable, and you know, his belief in himself is unbelievable. Actually, one time I was watching, I thought, you know, the fight was real questionable. I thought it was kind of a draw, personally. But, you know, Carrick just got out-hustled. But there was a point in the third round when Diego was actually, maybe the third or second, I don't recall. But Diego was put in a bad position. And he, you know, he was laying down, he took a deep breath, and you know, then he just turned it on. And then from that point on, the third round, he just took it to Carl, so... I mean, he's a real self-motivated guy, and he's impressive.
And when you look at this fight, Joe, you know, people throw in names right now as far as the title picture goes for Georges St-Pierre. Of course, he's going to be fighting Matt Serra next, and I want to ask you about your thoughts on that fight in a bit. But first, where does this rank, this fight with Diego, in your career? I mean, it's got to be up there, I would think, the thought that if you do beat Diego, then that immediately catapults you into title contention.
Yeah, it's right up there at the title shot, you know, it's beating a guy like Diego. I think it's one of the biggest fights of my career, you know, beating a guy that's, you know, highly publicized, that's undefeated, and, you know, the people hold him in such high regard, to be great. You know, I mean, it's a really, really big win for me.
Yeah.
You fought on a lot of big, fight cards, and I wonder, when people see you and recognize you, is there any one card that stands out more than any other, or any fight of yours that stands out for any other that people recognize and affiliate you with?
Yeah, believe it or not, man, Spike TV hates me or something, man, because I've had some really, I mean, I don't think I've ever had not an exciting fight in UFC, much less in my career, and I mean, and they just insist on showing Mike Swick, Matt Hughes, Ivan Salvey, the ones I lose. And they, I mean, with Nick Diaz, I mean, that was one of the fights of the year, man. They got to burn me down. So, I mean, yeah, I get noticed a lot for the ones I've lost. So.
Yeah, that Matt Hughes one is on all the time, it seems, the fight against Matt.
Always, man, always. Yeah. I mean, it's terrible.
Everyone thinks you're a UFC tomato can.
Yeah, but I mean, the guys, the people that just watch Spike TV, man, I mean, that's what I'm, the people that just watch Spike TV, they just watch me lose. I mean, good God.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you talked about Spike TV and the Ultimate Fighter reality show, etc. with Spike TV. Do you think, Joe, that Matt Serra's got a chance to beat Georges St-Pierre?
Yeah, no. I mean, no, not at all. I mean, I think Matt Serra's a good fighter in his own right, but I mean, stylistically, that's a terrible matchup for him because he should be a 155 pounder. I mean, if George St. Pierre, if Matt Hughes couldn't take George down, I mean, no way Matt Serra's going to be able to. I mean, it's just going to be a real long night for Matt.
Yeah. And what do you think the UFC's going to do as far as shaping up their title shots for George St. Pierre next year? I mean, there's still. No one really knows yet. Matt Hughes hasn't necessarily confirmed yet what his plans are going to be, but everything points to him coming back. Do you see next year being an interesting year for the welterweight belt, provided that George St. Pierre gets past Matt Serra?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a busy year for George. I mean, everybody loves seeing the guy fight. You know, the welterweight division is one of the most stacked in the UFC. I think it's just going to be a shuffle of title defenses for him.
Yeah.
Tight fights me, you know.
For a guy who's been known to stir the pot a little bit before fights, you seem to be training. You seem to train with a lot of your potential competitors now. So, reflecting back on the George St. Pierre Matt Serra fight, they're kind of almost sort of cousins as MMA cousins. You were training with Carl, for instance, who was just an obvious opponent of yours at 170. Do you prepare differently in terms of your mindset? Do you prefer to have a certain animosity towards people you fight, or would you be happy to fight guys that you've trained with?
No, you never. I mean, I think that's one of the cardinal rules. You never go on to fight angry. But you always work out stuff, not fighting guys you train with. I mean, that's what I try to do. Me and Carol talked about that. You know, not fight each other before we worked out. So. you know, you don't like to fight guys you work out with. That's something that's not fun. Like, when I had to fight Chris Lytle, that was really hard on me, you know?
And, you know, you're talking about the guys that you've trained with at 170, and John Alesso is another member that you've trained with, and you guys are good friends. What was the general thoughts from his training camp and himself in regards to his last loss in the UFC?
Yeah, John was down in Phoenix with me the whole time. As you know, I was in his corner. I mean, John just didn't show up, man. I mean, I know how it is to have a fight for not showing up. I just didn't. Yeah, I mean, John's a lot better fighter than that. John's a great fighter. And not saying Thiago Alves isn't, but that wasn't John there, right? Not at all. But, I mean, and I feel for the guy, too, because, you know, sometimes you go in there, you just don't have it, you know? You just don't have that magic. So when you go out there, you just got to do the best you can do with what you have, you know?
Well, Brendan mentioned you kind of, you know, being known for stirring the pot a little bit, and on your previous appearances on FCF Radio. We've talked about some other guys that you'd like to fight, and Drew Fickett was a name that you brought up a couple times. Any progress in that respect? Do you think there's any shot that you might get a fight with Drew at some point?
I think that was a failure. Drew turned the fight down 2 times in a row. He was, I'm hoping I'll get in trouble from Joe Silva by saying this, but like, he offered him the fight, and then he said he wanted me drug tested every day every day or twice a week until the fight, and then he wanted like $10,000 or $15,000 over his fight purse. I mean, I'm not sure if that was the exact amount of money, but he was just asking for outlandish requests and knowing that Joe won't give it to him. So I mean, he knows what would happen if I fought him. I mean, I trained the guy for years, and I used to roll that guy up like a joint and smoke him in practice, you know.
You have now are the second fighter to have the acumen and honor to have been on our show 3 times, and the guy who beat you to the punch is Dennis King. Any words for Dennis? You know, he's interested in you coming up to 185 to fight for the full contact radio fighter 4th slot. So, you're going back up to 85?
No, I'm not going back up to 85. That guy's a stud too, man. That guy's an animal.
Yeah,
my weight's down. I got it right where I want to be, so I'm staying down at 170.
Yeah, Brendan continues to play hypothetical matchmaker. As always,
I think Craig Mears out of the picture now.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to get up to go up 15. Kang claims that he would have to amputate something to go down to 170, so I don't see it happening anytime in the future.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. And we tried to beg you to go up to 250 to take on Frank Mir, but there hasn't been any notice from you on fulfilling your end of the bargain there, Joe. You're letting us down.
Yeah, you know, I'm letting a lot of people down. I'm not getting the status as I expected to be.
So you're saying, like, if a case of Doritos and Cheese Whiz showed up on your door, you wouldn't tie into that? You couldn't resist. You could resist the temptation.
No, I won't lie to you. I would guess I would be all over that. For this fight, send me some of those tasty treats. I'd be all over that stuff. I'm predicting I'm probably gonna get about 225 after this fight within a week.
Nice.
I can't wait, man. I've been dieting for a long time for this fight, so I'm rather excited about after this fight, especially Christmas. My wife likes to bake, so it's gonna be good for me.
Yeah, that's true. Good timing. Holiday season's just around the corner. Joe, before I let you go, just two more quick questions. Serious questions where, you know, Brendan sidelined us in a little bit there, as he always does. But
damn you.
Yeah.
You remember, Kelsey's an MMA journalist.
Right.
And I'm just some guy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Joe, what are your thoughts on George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes? I mean, what were your thoughts on Matt's performance? We had Tim Sylvia on the show a couple weeks ago, and he said that he thought Matt just didn't look like himself either in that fight. From a guy who's trained a little advantage, what were your thoughts?
So Tim said Matt didn't look like himself?
Matt didn't look like himself, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, about a month ago, I would have kept my mouth shut and not said anything. But Matt came down to Phoenix and disrespected me in front of my wife. You know, you know what the guy did? Tell me if you think this is a shithead thing to say. Okay, he comes in, my manager, he goes into his house, he meets my wife for the first time, and he says, and I'm like, hey, Matt, this is what he said. He's like, oh, hey, sorry to beat your husband's ass. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. And then he goes, you may not think I'm funny, but people don't like my sense of humor, but I think it's funny. So I was pissed off, and I said, all that of there. But, you know, I mean, I've tried to be as nice as I've tried to say as nice as things possible about him falling in, but I've had it. I want to go and let it hang out now. Now, repeat the question. I got off track a little bit.
Well, just in essence, what were your thoughts on Matt's performance in that fight? And do you think that if, you know, some people are saying that Matt could take him in a rematch, possibly, that it wasn't the real Matt Hughes that night?
No, that was the real Matt Hughes. That was the real ridiculous Matt Hughes. I mean, Matt's a great fighter. I mean, he's the most decorated champion of all. But the way he fought that night, man, George made him look like a ridiculous man. You know, I don't think he has a shot now on a rematch. You know, that's just a bad thing. He had double underhooks on him, and George snapped it. You know, I mean, there's nothing he could do. He made Matt look like a 55-year-old man, you know.
And so, why do you think that is? You just think that George is just stronger, better fighter all around, and that's case closed?
Pretty much, you know. Pretty much, I think Matt Hughes he's progressed, but not as much as a lot of fighters. Matt Hughes lives up in Illinois, and you know, and he when he takes a fight, he comes down and spends, you know, 3 weeks getting back in shape, and he doesn't train in the off season, when a lot of fighters use that time to progress in their skills.
Yeah.
Matt doesn't do that. And I think it showed when he fought George. I mean, he said in his interview, "I'm going to beat him up, and then I'm going to knock him out." He didn't beat anybody. He didn't knock anybody out. You know what I mean? It was a bad deal. So, I mean, he's got to go back to the drawing board and, you know, sharpen up his boxing if he wants to compete with someone like George.
And then my final question for you, which might be another sore spot, Nick Diaz has looked impressive in his last two UFC fights. Your thoughts on Nick's recent performances in the UFC?
Oh, he looked good, man. I think I was just talking to my wife about that. I love watching Nick Diaz fight. I think he's a great fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an ass. I mean, as for his personal life, he's just not a nice guy. I mean, I've tried to be nice to him. He's not nice to me. So I think Nick Diaz is a great fighter. I think he's really impressive and looked good in his last performances.
Brendan, anything else
so
for Joe?
If Joe Silva called you up and said, you know, apart from yourself, who are we going to have to put against this French guy to knock him out of the 170 title? Any thoughts on who that individual might be?
Moral, it would be me. I think I got to pick. I think.
Other than
I
me,
said
I
not you.
But not me, okay.
Other than you.
I think actually Nick Diaz would be good. I mean, that'd be a good fight for Nick Diaz, personally.
Yeah. What about John Fitch?
That'd be good for him. Because, I mean, on the ground, I think Nick Diaz is better, and then he has a shot on the feet, so.
Anything John Fitch, as far as his wrestling?
I said about John Fitch. I thought about all those guys down at AK. All those John Fitch and Josh Koscheck. I think John Fitch would be a hard fight for him, too.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be much room between you guys at 170. Do you think this is hands down the toughest division in the UFC?
By far, it's deep, man. I mean, it's deep. It goes like 10. I mean, you think there's only like, I mean, every other division there's like four serious contenders. I mean, this division there's like 10 of them. There's 10 that could, you know, be a legitimate title, have title shots at any given time, you know.
Well, Joe, we appreciate you coming on the show once again. You, as always, you're a very entertaining guest to have, and we appreciate the insights that you bring to FCF Radio. Joe Riggs taking on Diego Sanchez December 13th on Ultimate Fight Night. Joe, you're going to be in the main event for Spike TV. Everybody's going to get to see you, man.
Hey, hold on. Who do you think is going to win? Let's see your pick.
You know what? That's tough. Both Brendan and I have picked against Diego. I think we both picked Carroll to win. And I think even prior to that, I went with Diego over Alessio, and I think Brendan went with Johnny Alessio, didn't you, Brendan?
Yeah, I always pick against Diego.
Yeah, and so I think for that reason...
And he set us up for an interview a couple weeks ago, so screw him. I'm definitely cheering for you.
Did you get one? He didn't give you guys an interview?
No,
well,
he stood us up, yeah. We had an interview booked, and...
He stood us up like an ugly prom date. Kelsey and I are waiting with our tuxedos on, our corsages and our lapels, and no ring of the doorbell.
Yeah.
You poor bastard. That's terrible. So, Who are you picking? Are you picking him or me?
I think because I've picked against him the last couple times, if I was to bet, I probably would go with Diego.
And how about you, sir?
Joe, I want you to put the initials BL on your right elbow. I'm picking you.
Dude, thank you, guys. Thank you for being honest. Even though you've crushed my spirits, now I don't think I'll be able to fight.
Well, Brendan,
let me help you. I'm not crushing your spirits.
Yeah.
I'm on your side.
Yeah.
Brendan,
thank
you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Done for you, buddy. I'll get it done.
Well, this show, no doubt, I'll get plenty of feedback from, thanks to you two, so. All right, Joe. Well, thanks again, man, and we look forward to watching you fight next week.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a good night, and I'll talk to you guys sometime in the future.
Okay, sounds good.
Good luck, Joe. Thanks a lot.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus, the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Ronan Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Some interesting comments from Joe Diesel Riggs. As always, a very entertaining interview and a great guest to have on the radio show, Brendan.
And actually, Riggs seems to be maturing, you know, like a fine wine or a fine cheese. Yeah, I find him not quite as acerbic these days. He's a little bit subtler, which is nice.
Yeah, well, he's a married man now, and he's getting a little bit older. Definitely, I think some people always said with Joe that he said on our show that he sometimes questioned his mental abilities in the octagon and was, you know, easily frazzled at times. But it seems like over the last couple fights, he's had some notable wins, and it seems like he's really kind of living up to the expectations that he's always had. A lot of people thought that he would be a devastating force at 170 pounds, and I think somewhat that remains still to be seen. But certainly wins over guys like Nick Diaz, and he looked very impressive against Jason Von Flue most recently. I think he's starting to put some of the troubles that have plagued him in a couple other fights. The most memorable one was the weight, cutting a weight problem against Matt Hughes, and he didn't look very well, didn't look very impressive against Matt Hughes as a result, and didn't really seem to have his mental game that night. So he sounds like a confident guy coming up against Diego Sanchez, and that's going to be a really tough fight. And it'll be really interesting, because if he were to win that fight, certainly all of a sudden you look at a guy like Joe Riggs, and if he beats someone like Diego Sanchez, you look at the kind of fighter he is and the sort of build-up that Riggs has, you could see him sort of fitting into a nice challenger for someone like George St. Pierre. But as I say that, I think this fight will really be the telling factor in that, because Diego certainly is renowned for being able to take the fight to the ground. And if he can get Riggs to the ground, I personally think Diego's going
to
win.
Well, this has definitely got to be considered to be the biggest fight of his career. There's no doubt about that. You know, if he wins, he's right back in the scheme of things and looking quite good, actually. But if he loses, he may be demoted to either gatekeeper or maybe demoted right out. But it's, you know, people write off these fighters. It sometimes makes me laugh that you can be a sort of, you could be considered to be washed up, you know, at under 25 years of age, and sometimes we forget because the sport really hasn't been around that long. That you know, these guys might be around; they still might be fighting in 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough to say. You know, I think you've got to have some kind of perspective, and maybe Riggs has got to realize that if he's in it for the long haul, that these fights can't be. They can't be as monumental in your mind as you may make them out to be.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that after his first couple of UFC appearances. He took out a guy, you know, a very notable fighter, and Joe Dirksen defeated him. He beat Chris Lytle. Then he had some kind of quick losses to people like Mike Swick. That was a disappointing loss, very quick guillotine choke, and like I mentioned, Matt Hughes. So I think his true value as a fighter is still yet to be determined, and he certainly seems to have the physical skills and the physical prowess, if you will, to be a top-flight fighter. And everyone who trains with him, whether on the record or off the record, you hear that quite constantly from a lot of guys who train with Joe Riggs and say that, like, look, this guy, if he was to put together a strong mental game and have that accompany him into the octagon, he could be the best fighter welterweight in the world. And so it still remains to be seen. But Brendan, like, I wanted to ask you a little bit more because Joe asked us to give our picks, and I went with Diego and you went with Joe. And, you know, I had the balls to say, make my real prediction. Was that your real prediction, or are you just playing Mr. Nice Guy to Joe while he was on the air?
I'm still going, I'm still picking with my heart these days, and not with my head.
Right.
But no, I don't think it's necessarily that wild a prediction.
No,
Diego's going to be a favorite, but if there's someone who can take out Diego, it's going to be someone like Riggs, who's a good enough wrestling to stand with him, and good enough wrestling not to be taken down at least numerous times or at will, and has the ability to knock him out or cut him open. And I think that definitely Riggs has both those things. So I guess one of the things that really is an unknown to me is what is the quality of Diego's stand up, and he really hasn't demonstrated that it's at a level that's on par with someone like Riggs or someone like I guess the Alessio was kind of a bad matchup, but I mean, you got to think that's a good comparison. So you know, Riggs has got to take lessons, I think, from that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at some of the people that Diego has beaten, and I mean, he deserves a lot of credit, and I think slowly but surely he is starting to receive the credit that he deserves, and it wasn't always forthcoming.
Well, he's got his own commercial now.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he has beaten some very notable fighters, Carol Parisian, Nick Diaz.
Yeah, I think one of the things with Diego that we've seen is that, I guess my only, and this isn't even a criticism, because he's really fought some legit fighters in his last two or three fights, but he hasn't demonstrated that capacity to finish. And I think when you're fighting someone like Carl, for instance, who looked like he kind of ran out of gas at the end of that fight, that's not a big deal. You can eat out a decision. But if you're fighting someone who's got lots of gas and who's got heavy hands through the entire three rounds, you know, if Riggs can do enough not to be finished, then he's always got that chance. And I think Diego, I'm not sure of whether he's been exposed to that risk yet or not, and I think Briggs is just the kind of fighter who can demonstrate that, demonstrate the fatal flaw of not being a finisher.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's next week, and the first show next week, we'll try to make our picks for the Ultimate Fight Night, which takes place next Wednesday. In the meantime, Brett, a couple other things I wanted to ask you about. We've got the Strike Force show in San Jose, California this Saturday night, and I wanted to ask you, when you look at the lineup, you've got some of the fights include Bobby Southworth versus Vernon White, Josh Thompson versus Nam Phan, Kung Lee versus Jason Von Flu, which seems to be catching more of the hype, I guess it's safe to say, largely on account of Kung Lee. Are you excited about this card at all? Do you find that you're interested in this card very much, or...
I've seen a couple of their cards, but it's tough to get excited because this really seems to be an event that has an unbelievable amount of momentum in California and not really much momentum anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Kung Lee, I've never ever seen him fight in MMA, and I don't really know much about his background, but he seems to be a huge star, which is strange to me, but. I'd like to hear just why he is.
Well, he's got the very famous kickboxing background based on his kung fu background, so I think that he's a legend in the martial arts scene for that reason. In the more traditional martial arts, he's kind of come up through that route and had some success, and that's why part of the reason he's a big star, you know, in kind of like the Black Belt magazine circles, etc. And, you know, he's only had a couple fights in mixed martial arts. so far they've pretty much put him up against guys that are more noted for striking that will stand with him, and he's had successes there. I think in the Jason Van Flew case, it will probably be the most well-rounded mixed martial arts fighter that he will have had to encounter yet. And so I would think that Jason Van Flew will try to go for the takedown, try to get him down, because as I mentioned, he has some accomplishments in kickboxing that are pretty impressive. So,
well, it's certainly nice, and I think we're seeing a lot more of that now. More traditional martial artists bringing techniques back into MMA just to offer a different look. And like we said before, that the whole game is really it really moves along in this sort of dialectical process. And we've seen GSP obviously incorporate a lot of traditional martial arts into his MMA, and it seems to be very effective. So, you know, again, I think the camera cut out, but on the GSP fight, but didn't he catch Hughes with another spinning back kick?
I don't know if he caught him with two, but
not two in the same fight, but he caught him in the first fight with
almost caught him in this fight, but I don't think it really landed very solidly.
Yeah, I didn't. The camera actually didn't follow it, so you didn't see the end of that, but. No, I like it. I like the idea of more traditional martial arts influencing MMA again, or having some influence on MMA again. And I also like the idea of more of the philosophical side of martial arts coming into MMA. I think that would be a great contribution.
And you mentioned this card sort of having a very strong Californian feel and not sort of circumventing that state too much, and I agree with that to an extent, but when you look at whoever's doing the matchmaking, they're doing a good job trying. You can tell by looking at some of the matchups that they are going to feature a lot of stand-up action. Vernon White versus Bobby Southworth, you'd have to assume that fight will be two light heavyweights standing, exchanging, so that'll be entertaining from that perspective. And then you've got Josh Thompson's going to fight Nam Phan, who has had a lot of success in King of the Cage. He's an up-and-coming lightweight fighter, and then Josh Thompson is well accomplished as well, so that's going to be an entertaining lightweight battle. I think one of the more, probably has potential to be the best fight from a purist mixed martial arts viewpoint. And it's too bad that someone like Gilbert Melendez was scheduled to fight, and now he's going to be fighting in Pride's upcoming card in Shockwave, so he's no longer on the card, and that definitely would have taken away some draw, I would think, because Gilbert Melendez being a California fighter and one of their better fighters that signed to Strikeforce.
Yeah, well, I think it will definitely be an interesting card, and I guess it's tough. You know, sometimes it's tough to see stuff like that, especially if they don't have a TV deal or if it's not on TV. And it's nice to see local shows. You know, that can make money and have a decent business plan by doing live shows that don't necessarily have all the extension in there, and they're happy with that to make it work as their model. So,
mm-hmm.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's tough. It's tough to get pumped up from outside of California, I guess, is the only problem. Maybe if the full contact fighter truck gets here, it has to go back down there, and we can swing by Vancouver and go down.
Well, I mean, and when we talk about California, it's certainly not to say that there's not going to be a lot of people interested in the results from that card outside of California. That's not what we're saying. It's just that the card does feature a few Californian fighters, and it seems that. You know, you haven't heard that it doesn't necessarily have the international flair that perhaps like the Bodog card just did this weekend, but then there's Ring of Fire this weekend as well on Saturday night. That takes place in Denver, Colorado, and the main event there is going to be Alvin Robinson versus Rocky Johnson. Alvin Robinson is a up-and-coming lightweight fighter. He's had a little bit of buzz behind him. And then probably the most notable name on that card that would strike out at people would be Mark Hominick from Team Tompkins. He'll be fighting at 145 pounds. He's taking on Douglas Edwards. And don't know a lot about Douglas Edwards. He doesn't have a lot of experience in comparison to Mark. And it's interesting, we talked about this, I think, last week's show, or one of the shows last week, about Mark fighting on this card. And the fact that when Sean was on the program, his manager, Sean Tompkins, said that Mark wanted to remain active and get him some fights. And the UFC hadn't set there was no date set in stone for Mark, so they wanted to get him on this card. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that fight unfolds, and the fact that you've got a promotion like Ring of Fire in Colorado, which largely features local talent, bringing in a UFC fighter like Mark Hominick is a bit of a draw.
Apparently his opponent has a very, very good stand-up, so I think that's what they're bringing in, someone like Hominick, so that will be that will be one of the marquee bouts on the card, I'm sure. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And it will be interesting. Maybe I think we're actually going to get to see that on the Fight Network, I believe, is that show is going to be aired at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was all the news concerning the IFL. There's been a ton of things coming out of their organization. They announced their full slate for next year, and there's pretty much, when you look at it, they're having a show almost every month, Brendan. And then there's some interesting super fights which have been announced as well. So I wanted to hear your first initial thoughts on that. Of course, you've got Carlos Newton taking on Enzo Gracie at the end of this month. Some of the super fights that they've announced for future events, they've got Ivan Salivary taking on Eduardo Pabloa. That'll be in January, so they've inked Ivan Salivary. And then you've got Carlos Newton versus Matt Lindland. That's going to take place February 2nd. That's already been signed. And then another really interesting matchup and is set for March 17th, St. Paddy's Day in L.A., Marco Ruas versus Maurice Smith, Brendan.
Yes, the battle of the battle of the Irishmen.
Right.
I'm very excited. Actually, I'm excited about all these fights except and anxious for one. I think Carlos Enzo is great. That's a rematch. Carlos Matt Lindland. We'll see. I think Carlos, if anything, his critics will say that Carlos has been only working half-heartedly over the past few years. He hasn't fought very much, and basically what he's doing is stepping back into competition, real competition, and fighting the best middleweight in the world, arguably the best middleweight in the world. So that is going to be an incredibly tough fight for Carlos, and it will be interesting to see what he does with that fight, what he looks like coming in.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what Matt tries to do with it. Will he try to use his wrestling capabilities to keep the fight standing and maybe test his hands? Both those fighters have really worked on their striking a lot over the last few years, and Matt, coming off the TKO win over Jeremy Horn. Or will Matt try to take it to the ground and do the ground and pound? Will he be able to get Carlos to the ground? One would assume that answer will ultimately be a certain yes, that he would be able to take Carlos down because of his great wrestling background. But yeah, I definitely think that will be a tough fight for Carlos. There's no doubt about it.
Well, he certainly can't be said to be dodging anyone then, if that's his first real legitimate MMA fight. That will certainly test the fact of whether he's a contender at 185 or not. I like the IFL teams are looking great. The IFL cards are looking great. The super fights are very interesting. I've always said there's nothing wrong with setting up matches that feature old or more popular fighters with a name. But you've got to do it correctly, and I think this is exactly the way you want to do it. Like, who doesn't want to see Marcos Ruas fight again and bust out some vicious leg kicks and foot stompings? Like, who doesn't want to see that? But you don't want to see that. You don't want to see those cards being mismatches, or you don't want to see those guys fighting tomato cans. You want to see legitimate old school MMA, and I think that's going to be a great example of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the IFL's other super fights have tended to be excellent as well. So I really enjoy the matchmaking in this, and they've always put on a great product. It's great to look at, even if you're not familiar with a lot of the fighters, as I'm sure some people aren't. They've always got a great product. It's an exciting product, I think. And, just to really round out the card, some of these super fights that I've had are interesting in and of themselves, outside the context of who's the best fighter in the world. But
I think
it's good to watch great fighting,
I think what they're trying to do is they realize that a lot of these fighters, other than Matt Lindland, most of them, as far as we're talking about the super fights, these guys aren't necessarily in the prime of their career, certainly not the case of Marco Ruas and Maurice Smith. But it's very clever because they know that they have very talented young fighters as well. And by using people like Pat Miletich, by using people like Carlos Newton, Enzo Gracie, and the other fighters we mentioned, people are going to come down and want to see these guys fight, even if they're not familiar with some of the great matchups that they have on the undercard or in the team matchups. And then they're going to start to become familiar with the Ryan Schultzes, the Chris Horodeckis, the Bar Paloweskis, those kind of fighters that could be competitive fighters in some of the bigger organizations but still compete in the IFL. I mean, they've got great fighters all down the list, so you're right. Some of these guys who aren't necessarily household names because they haven't been on the UFC, haven't been the benefactor of being on Spike TV, fans come in, or they tune in to Fox Sports, you know, Fox Sports or the Fight Network up here, or sorry, Sportsnet up here in Canada to show, it shows the IFL, and they want to tune in to watch Matt Lillen versus Jeremy Horn. At the same time, they get to see a couple other great up-and-coming fighters.
Yeah, I think one of the marks of being a good organization is the more you're exposed to it, the more you actually like it. And I think that's been, it would be interesting to talk to other people about this, but that's been my experience with the IFL. So the first show I was kind of, you know, you could tell there were some good minds at work behind it, but it didn't really knock my socks off. But the more and more I'm exposed to IFL, and I've watched all the shows now, the more and more I like it. And I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of the IFL now, and I really like, I think they've envisioned a niche in the market, and they're really doing a great job to fill it. And it will be tough to compete against someone like the IFL very soon, whereas, you know, big money can come in and compete against the UFC, you know, Showtime being a good example, or Don King, or someone like that, someone who can basically steal away all their fighters or have you know, basically financial wars over their fighters. And that's really not the IFL's niche at all, so I think they're doing a great job, and I look forward to seeing this new season. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Well, there's a ton of new teams, and one of the more interesting news on the side of the new teams, rather, this last week was the tryouts for Ken Shamrock's Lions. And apparently, Brendan, there was over 150 people came and tried out. So Ken, approaching it a little bit differently than a lot of the other coaches who sort of hand-picked their fighters. In the case of Carlos Newton, he took a lot of Ontario fighters that he was familiar with. Henzo Gracie took a lot of his actual students, fighters who fought underneath him. Of course, Pat Miletich. I mean, the Silverbacks are virtually a Miletich team. But Ken Shamrock approaching a little bit differently, and I'm not sure how many positions he's filling via the tryouts, but yeah, he had over 150 people should come and try out for the IFL's Lions.
No, I think that's great. I think that demonstrates the depth of MMA out there for sure. But didn't Shamrock have a Lions Den tryout last year as well?
I think it's two separate things. I think that's the Lions Den, and this is for the Lions, for the IFL team itself. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know if he's going to, if he's only taking a few guys from these tryouts and trying to place them in certain parts of the roster for his team. I mean, there's 8 spots on an IFL team roster, so I don't know if he's going to draw from his actual Lions Den or what the case is, but I just saw that there was a lot of people showing up to try out, and that's a great PR move for the IFL. It's great exposure for them, just having that many fighters come down to try out to get on the team. Knowing full well, I mean,
who isn't going to want to watch the first fight of Frank Shamrock's team against his brother Ken's?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, for some of these guys, if you've been a struggling mixed martial artist, you know, or starting out and don't have, haven't had a lot of big fights or not getting a lot of big payouts, I mean, the IFL salary is, I think, around $30,000, $25,000 a year. So it's not a ton of money, but certainly that goes a long ways to some of these guys who would like to fight exclusively. And there's also team incentives, there's fight bonuses, etc. So I think that side of the IFL is going to help recruit a lot of fighters. And, I mean, they're expanding a ton of teams. We've got a team coming out of Russia as well. So lots of news coming from the IFL.
I have noticed that it seems like the IFL discourages personal sponsorship, at least the advertisement of that on your gear. I wonder what the relationship was with the fighters and their sponsors and their individual sponsors. I know the IFL has a lot of big corporate sponsors, so I'm wondering what that relationship looks like and whether or not there'll be a time where you could actually make a lot of money fighting in the IFL rather than you know, a salary that allows you to train full time and live like a professional fighter. It'll be interesting to see whether or not more money gets infused that way, and hopefully that will be the case at some point.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to see. And we've bitched about this before, hopefully the turnaround on events will be quicker and we'll get to see some of the IFL events sooner rather than later next year, because like I said, there's pretty much a fight every month. And Brendan, yeah, my last question for you is, on that note, do you think there have been some people who've brought this up, and I think most people who truly love the sport would say the answer is no. But do you think that we're going to start reaching a saturation point here as far as mixed martial arts in North America? I mean, if you've got the IFL every month next year, you've got the UFC doing one or two shows every month, and you've got Pride. Apparently, they're going to be coming to North America quite a bit. You've got all the local regional shows. I personally love it. I'm a huge MMA fan. But do you think we're getting to a point here where it's just going to be too much and it might just be overexposing the sport?
Well, I guess it depends what the product looks like, and I like the idea that the IFL has a product that you can be exposed to over and over, and the fighters fight in a way that the rules of the IFL I think keep the fighters a little bit safer with no elbows on the ground, and hopefully they'll be able to fight quite a bit. And the question is, you know, does anyone complain that there's 12 professional football games on every week in the States, or however 16 or however many football games there are on, or, you know, any night you turn on the TV there's baseball on? I don't think so. And especially, I think if the IFL continues to really to build legitimate teams, so you know these guys, and I think this is what they have to work towards, the idea that these guys actually live in close proximity and train together, and it's not just a bunch of guys flying in from here and there fighting under a funny colored banner. If you get the idea that there is some kind of camaraderie or real team training agenda, then I think it becomes all the more interesting.
Yeah, and then that's certainly a whole other side to the IFL that I think remains to be seen. I mean, are we going to be talking about in a few years salary caps or free agents how are they going to get to that point? I mean, right now it's pretty much each team sort of looks out into the vast fighter pool, and guys who aren't under contract or not under exclusive contracts to other organizations can sign to any team. So that sort of opens up a whole Pandora's box to see what's going to happen for the IFL. Are we going to see trades at some point?
Yeah, it seems to be very fluid. So Salivary, I noticed, just signed, but he's signed to fight. He's not signed to fight on a team, is he?
No, just super fight. Yeah.
In super fights, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it'll be great to see him back as well, too. So I think they're really trying to work. All angles in an interesting way, and I think they can do it. The way they're doing it is more interesting than in the UFC. Say, for instance, when they brought back Tank Abbott, did anyone really want to see Tank Abbott fight Frank Mir? No, but, you might have wanted to see Tank Abbott fight, someone like Don Fry or something like that. You know, who wouldn't watch that on Saturday afternoon for free? It's a great idea.
Yeah, well, I think there were a lot of people who wanted to see Tank Abbott fight Frank Mir, but I think after that fight, I think the interest, I think people started to realize he would no longer be able to compete against some of the better fighters, and there was a lot of buzz about his fights with Cabbage, and even in the rematch which took place in Hawaii, there was a buzz. But I know what you're saying, and it's going to be an interesting year next year. It's hard to believe that after this year, where at the beginning of 2006, as everyone looked forward and the UFC made their announcements, and Pride and made their announcements, it's somewhat hard to believe that next year is going to even be busier and could be twice as busy as far as mixed martial arts go. So it's going to be crazy.
I think this is the year where this next year or two is a year where a lot of things are going to get sorted out in terms of what looks good, what MMA is going to become as a product, what will count as success in MMA, and what will count as what will really stand apart as a marketable product. And I think one of the nice things about MMA for me is that I like watching fighting apart from the side story of, oh, this fight's for a championship or something like that. And it's like, you go to a bar and you see some hot chick dancing. It's not like she's dancing to be the best dancer in the world, or is she going to win, she's going to win some kind of contest. You kind of like them just because they're nice to look at. MMA is like that sometimes as well. The fight itself is a performance. And good fights should stand alone. Good fights should stand apart from you should set themselves apart in being that, like a fight that you can watch over again. I'm actually very bad for that, but there are certain fights that I can watch over and over again, but I'll only watch, you know, mediocre sort of UFC or Pride card or whatever once, and then I'll never watch it again, you know, if nothing stands out my mind. But there are certain fights that I'll watch again because they have a sort of inherent beauty to them. And I think the IFL could work toward, you know, the IFL could work towards making fighting a product like that, you know, with legendary fights rather than, you know, this guy was undefeated or this guy was the champion of this or that, you know. And the more and more saturated the market becomes, the less and less meaningful those types of titles are going to be, and I think the more compelling argument there will be to make the fights as entertaining as possible.
Well, on that note, Brendan, it sounds like you've got a bottle of champagne and strawberries ordered up to the room, and you're going to be slipping into a nice hot bubble bath. So.
I love the bubble bath.
I and the listeners will let you go and do whatever it is you have to do, but that was very eloquently put, and you enjoy the champagne.
How you mock me.
Yes.
If I weren't paid so much to do this show, Kelsey, I just don't know if I could put up with it.
All right, buddy, well, get home to Edmonton safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Adios, muchacho.